This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared. And remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers at sunoven.com. That's preppers at sunoven.com. BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci.
Hey, 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 welcome to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. We have Colorado Ron, as always, and I am your co-host, Bubba Da Vinci. How are you doing, Colorado?
Good, good. How are you doing this morning?
I'm trying to get pumped up. I'm trying to get my pumped up on, because we have we were just talking a few minutes ago. You've got like 101 degree weather coming into you, and I've got another day of rain and thunderstorms coming into me. It's bleak. It's humid, and on days like this, I just have a hard time getting up and getting motivated.
I hear you, man. We got that fire going on right up the road from me, and I think it's like 100 square miles of fire, and, you know, it's smoky, you know, you kind of get the smoke. It makes for cool sunsets, though, but, yeah, it's just been crazy, and yesterday was 99, and today they're saying it's going to be 101, and, yeah, it's a little warm.
Yeah, I understand. I hear you, buddy.
But anyway, how'd you do with your to-do list last week? You there? Well, I guess we lost him, so wasn't sure if it was me that dropped or him, and I guess it was Bubba. So, anyway, the as far as we had a to-do list last week that we tackled, and I decided to take on doing the clearing out my water storage. And I, you know, we have 375 gallons. That was a lot of water to empty. So, you know, we watered the lawn, we watered the garden, we watered the berries and the strawberry patch, and we watered everything you can think of. And anyway, so we got it all done, and got our old water out, and topped it off and put some fresh water back in, and purified that. You know, put some bleach in there. And then capped it off. So usually, you know, normally I would say once a year, you probably need to change out your water. This time I went 2 years and it still looked fine. It still tasted fine. So I think I'm going to knock it back. Yes, I can hear you.
Wow, that was really weird. I was talking, and I could hear you, and for some reason, I was completely dead.
Must be the humidity out there.
Well, you know something? I think I was getting ready to say something that somebody didn't want me to say, and I think they just it was a long bleep.
Well, I was just talking about our to-do list, so we had some stuff we were going to tackle, so I was just going over. You know, I was surprised that my water storage, you know, I was telling everybody, I was surprised that my water storage, you know, had actually gone, and I always tell people to change it out once a year, and I looked at the last date that I topped it off, and it was actually 2 years ago. I forgot to do it last summer. So it was 2 years, and but it still tasted fine. So that was good. So it didn't have a bad taste at all. I did run it through a Berkey filter, too. You know, I tasted it just directly out of the container, and it was fine. And then I ran it through a Berkey filter, and it tasted like, you know, normal Berkey water taste. So it worked out good.
Well, that's good. Yeah, my list was, you know, and I want to make sure, I want to get this more organized. I think what we should do is pick something together and throw it out to the general audience or a topic and kind of do that. Yeah, I did my chickens. And got yep. my chickens reintegrated, and they're already laying. So, although incredibly small eggs, I didn't think the chickens could lay eggs this small. I mean, I don't even think they have a size recognized for this, because the first time we pulled them out, it was like, are these quail eggs?
You're like, take it back.
Yeah, because my last chicken. My last chickens laid like super jumbos. I mean, I can hear them squawking across the street because it must have been so painful to drop these eggs. And then these ones are the exact opposite, where they're incredibly small. And my guess is because they've been caged up for a week, you know, to home them, which I learned my lesson last time. You know, didn't want to have to chase them around, you know, for 2 days. So I homed them for a week. So I'm hoping from reading on the internet and talking to people on different websites and things like that, that the problem is that since we haven't let them out to free range yet, they're not getting all the protein and everything else they need to start generating the larger eggs. If not, these things are going to go to soup and I'm going to get a new set. Because, I mean, it takes like 12 of these things to make a meal. I mean, I'll shoot some pictures. Although one of the hens that we got delivered last week was a they call them an Easter egger. It actually lays green eggs.
Really?
Apparently there's a breed called Easter eggers. I mean, and so people know, we got these last week. We were on the radio, and there was a farm auction for livestock, and I was going to go, but we were doing the radio show, so I sent my brother-in-law, and he bid on this cage of hens, and yeah, it was for. Red Star pullets and one miscellaneous, and that miscellaneous one started, you know, dropping out light green eggs, like pastel green. So first I was wondering if I, you know, gotten a Dr. Seuss, you know, hen or something like that, and I'd never seen green eggs unless it came with ham, green ham, and And I looked it up, and I found out there's this breed called Easter Eggers, and they do. They naturally produce pastel-colored eggs.
That's cool.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, you get blues or, you know, greens, which is what I got. And let me tell you, every time I crack one of those eggs, I freak out a little bit just waiting for it to be like a green egg inside. Of course, they look like any other egg. So I did do that, and yesterday we went to the Amish vegetable auction to start getting stuff, you know, try to buy a bunch of extra product so we could start getting our canning on. And unfortunately, everything, it's been such a bad season, seems like everywhere. Things aren't growing as quickly, and that the prices were just outrageous. So we didn't
tell me about it. You know, we noticed that yesterday. We went to where did we go? We ran to the grocery store because, you know, the kids, you know, we had an accountant here this week doing some stuff, and he's here for two solid days, and the kids did really well, and so we thought we'd run down to the store and give him a treat, and we were in there, and just going down the treat aisle, I was amazed at the price jump on different sweet stuff like candies, Oreo cookies, and things like that. It's $5 for one little container of Oreo cookies, and all that stuff just shot way up. I have never seen it that high. It was $5 for a little bag of Hershey Kisses. I couldn't believe it.
Well, let me tell you. On that note, yeah, I had my show last night, and I was on with Ray Gano, and he has a book out called "Survive the Coming Storm," and he's got some fantastic. Did you listen to the show? If you didn't, you should have. It's awesome.
I did. It was Friday night, date night.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, you know something? It is on iTunes. But the information in here, forget that it was my show, but the information he has, some of the information in this book is really, really good. And we talked about a little bit about, most markets only having a 3-day supply because of the just-in-time delivery, you know, inventory service and things like that. But it got my wife and I talking, and when we went to the store also after the Amish thing, and she pointed out the cost of meat and the cost of peanut butter, because we go through a ton of peanut butter. We've got a ton of peanut butter stored. High protein, lasts a long time, and the kids will eat it on just about anything.
Yep.
It's gone up about 150% in cost. It's ridiculous, and you know, it's just a sign of the times. And for those people that are just getting into prepping, you really pay attention to the way the prices are going. These are the first types of steps towards hyperinflation and things like that. That you start seeing, you know, high costs of the products because of additional shipping costs and gas costs and all this other stuff. It's all interrelated. And let me tell you, when I see that big of a jump in peanut butter, you know, it makes me want to go down there and buy massive amounts of it because, you know, my kids basically live on peanut butter.
I love peanut butter. Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, I can't believe the amount of the hikes on all the food and, you know, bread. I remember when bread was. Well, we can go down the list, and there's all kinds of stuff. But yeah, it was $3.50 for a loaf of bread or something like that, $4. It's like, geez, you got to be kidding me. So everything is just jumping. And like you said, it is a sign of the times, and you need to make sure you get your food storage in place because once that stuff gets up too high, it's ridiculous. You can't afford it.
Yeah, no kidding. And you know, he was Ray, who does a show on our network, and like I said, also wrote this book. His concern is a coming financial crisis, and you know, we don't like to get into politics, so I'm not going to get into the political side. Although I might do a couple jabs at and have a little political conversation with Jack Spearco. So I'm going to jump. that was kind of an off segue. Yeah, I'm very excited today because we have Jack Spearco, who's going to be on live with us in about 10 minutes, and you know. we've had Jack at our events before, and obviously Jack is the owner and operator and voice of the Survival Podcast. And I had a couple people when we announced it last week say, I heard that you guys don't get along. And he gets along great with Colorado Ron. He gets along great with most of our people. And Jack and I, at least I'll throw this out there because we like to be very candid on the show. Jack and I don't dislike each other. I mean, actually, I'm a paid member of his – or a paid member of his group, and we listen to his stuff because I think he does a tremendous stuff on the Survival Podcast. We just don't necessarily agree on every aspect of why, how, and on becoming self-reliant. You know, he's definitely got the ways that he likes to do things that he suggests, and I have my concepts. Would you agree with that, Ron? I mean, I don't think we've ever been that dislike. It's just, you know. We don't necessarily agree on everything.
And that's totally to be expected. I mean, you're not supposed to agree. That's the beauty of this thing, though, is, I mean, everybody has their own way of doing it, and if you could take a little bit from Jack, and Jack might take a little bit from you, but it doesn't have to take your whole idea in order for all of us to be moving in the same direction.
Well, I hate to admit it, you know, and when he's on, I probably won't admit it live. But, you know, I've taken a lot more than a little from Jack. I mean, I think our most of our disagreements is how to progress this movement, because I'll tell you what, he was one of the first people that I listened to that I've told this story before. When I got into this, the reason I got into it was I thought 80% of the people that I met were full of, excuse the term, crap. You know, I'd contact them and I'd listen to their stuff and everything else. And I was like, you know, anybody could do this. I mean, I just got a book today. I got a book today and I was going through it. And it's like, you know, this guy's basically just taken 4 pages from a half a dozen books and put it together and wrote his own book. And I really believe the very first time I heard Jack Spierko on this thing that, A, he was genuine. He believed in what he was doing. And I agreed with most of what he was saying. And so, you know, he was one of the people that pushed me to not only becoming more prepared, including Colorado Ron. He's obviously my partner, so yeah, I believed in what he said. That it was good information, and I still take his podcast to this day. I still get a kick out of it when I get these little emails that say, "Hey, Bubba, you know, I've just uploaded a new podcast number such and such on." You know, and I'm like, "Ooh, it's all personal," but. At one time it might have been personal. Now Jack's too big, and you know he's got a whole system that does that for him. But I really appreciate what Jack does because he doesn't pull any punches, and neither do I, and neither do you. So it's there's always going to be some disagreements, but highly respect you know the things that he does.
Well, totally. So yeah, it'll be exciting to have him on here in a few minutes. What else, going back so we don't lose track, what else was on your to-do list for the week? Do you remember?
For me, yeah, well, I think, gosh, I had on my list that I was doing the chickens and I was going through my freezer. That was what was on my to-do list. And I got through my freezer. I made deer meat chili, which came out fantastic. My daughter's ate like the whole crock pot full like in a day. It was so awesome. And I'm going to post some of these recipes because my wife, she's definitely not a Heather, but Heather's fantastic at putting things together and cooking. My wife's more an experimenter. And, you know, I'm going to have to start standing next to her and writing down what she does because when she's successful, they're awesome. And when they're fails, they're epic fails. And I want to make sure. And she's still sleeping right now because she had a long night updating stuff for us for the event. So, she can't hear it, and she won't hear it today. So, she went ahead and we had a bunch of fish, bluegill, inside the freezer that I was getting a little frostbitten and it was a little bit old. And I said, "We'll get rid of all this and put it back in and get some new stuff to put in there." And we decided to make a hot and sour soup. So she looked up a hot and sour soup recipe, altered a little bit, and then, you know, got the eggs and slowly poured egg whites in it so you get the streaks of white egg white that goes through the whole thing. And let me tell you, you would not have known that that fish was like 6 months old in the freezer, 8 months old in the freezer. It was tender. It was excellent. The hot and sour soup really brought out the flavor of the bluegill. I was really happy. And then I killed a whole bunch of, not literally killed, I got rid of a bunch of or ate a bunch of, you know, pheasant breasts and turkey breasts that had been in there for a while. So I'm pretty much cleaned out. Now the job is just to fill the damn thing back up.
Well, good.
And I've gained a few pounds. But other than that, it was a beautiful thing.
Well, yeah, like I said, we did our water, got rid of all that water filtration stuff. I got the solar panels all hooked up and working for the Humless generator. So I was pretty excited about that. And I set it up so that they're mobile. I can move them and unhook them and move them around if I need to. But I kind of like where they're at and up on the roof, and I don't think I'll need to do that. But what else did I do? Oh, I hooked up all my emergency radios to the Humless. So I now have a shortwave and a CB hooked up to it. And let's see what else. I think that was it. I think that was all on my list. But it's been a crazy week, so that's all I could get done.
Yeah, and that's plenty. And I think what we need to kind of do is identify each week like a topic for all of us to kind of go and work on. Like, I'm going to suggest, because I found out this week that I'm horrible at this. Everybody, and you tell me if you're up for it or not, because I leave for Singapore on Thursday. Okay. So I have from today to Thursday to get this done. Go through your house and go through all your bug out bags, your packs, your emergency kits, your car, your truck, your garage, whatever it is, and pull out and test every flashlight for batteries and check your backup batteries. Because I found the other day that I pulled like three flashlights out in a row and found out dead batteries. And I've got several in the house that are plugged in and charge off electricity, and those are fine. And I've got several that are solar, and those are fine. But if, you know, I went through and started grabbing like my camp lanterns that we use for like when tornado stuff comes through and just backup stuff. And I realized, wow, I need to put something on a schedule to check this stuff on a regular basis, because some of the batteries are almost dead. You know, and everything's in like various stages of disrepair. And I'm thinking now that the best smart idea would be to do a one-time, you know, where you go out there, you replace the batteries every year, no matter what shape they're in, and just go ahead and make sure everything's up to date and then replace the backup batteries. So take your backup batteries, put them in everything, and then replace your backup batteries. Because even if you're not using them, with the changes of weather and things like that, it obviously drains them, because they're not as, you know, I couldn't believe how many units that I had that were almost dead.
Huh, that's a good point. You know, at the last expo, there was a company there that was called Solar Gadgets USA. And one of the things that I bought from them was a ton of the little double A's that were rechargeable, and the solar pack that went with them so that you could just charge them all in the sun. And so a couple of weeks ago, what was really cool is I had about, I think I got like 20 batteries, and the chargers only for four. And so I sat there and I charged it. I set the solar out and I charged all of them and got them all charged up. And then I also bought a tester so I could see, you know, how much juice these batteries have, because with six kids running around and, you know, Wii remotes and TV remotes and all that stuff, I always find batteries and I have no idea how much charge they got. So usually when in doubt, I would throw them away. Now I don't. So now I can test them with the charger and see how much juice they actually have.
Yeah, well, awesome. Here's something we should ask Jack, if he has a routine for, you know, testing his stuff also. And it looks like he's here. So I'm going to write that down as one of the 50 topics that we need to talk with him about. Do you have? And maybe we'll get to it, maybe we won't. But he's on, and Jack will be on via cell phone today, so we may drop him a couple of times. We're going to go to our commercial break so we make sure that we take care of the people who take care of us. And when we come back, we will be live with Jack Spearco of the Survival Podcast. We'll talk to you guys in three commercials.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disastrous situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just a conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that'll help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enerfood.com.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed, with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci. Hey, Colorado Ron.
Hey, hey, how's it going? I'm here. All right. So we're pretty excited. We've got our guest on, and our guest is Jack Spearco. He is the owner and author, I guess, or presenter at the operator. There we go. Operator at survivalpodcast.com. Now, the funny thing is he is mobile today. He is on the road, and so he's calling in from his cell phone. And the thing he pointed out, and I thought was pretty funny, was the first 2 years of his podcast were done via mobile from his cell phone. So I thought that was pretty cool, and I thought I guess we're going back in time here. Jack, are you there?
Coincidentally, I'm even in the Volkswagen Jetta diesel that I used for those 2 years, so we're back in the mobile studio again.
What are you driving right now?
I've got a diesel TDI, 2006. Last year they made them with this really cool motor in them, and so I get about 50 miles to the gallon without hybrid technology, just good old German engineering.
Nice, I love it. Well, I know that you're driving around, heading out through the backwoods there, but we've got some questions. We'd like to pick your brain here a little bit, and we're pretty excited also to announce that you'll be in Dallas at the Self-Reliance Expo, right?
Yeah, was it 27th and 28th of July? I'm really looking forward to it. Just a couple other expos with you guys last year, and you guys always do a great job, so it should be fun.
Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot for coming, and I really appreciate you guys supporting the event there. One of the questions we had was, obviously we've gotten several questions, a whole list of questions for people wanting to ask Jack Spirko questions. So one of the questions we had was, first of all, was the vehicle of choice. Now, we know that you like the Volkswagen, but, you know, a lot of guys got to haul stuff. So what would your choice of vehicle be for a guy that needs to haul gear?
I'll tell you what, the Jetta is our little jump-around car. If you want to say a bug-out vehicle or tactical vehicle or work vehicle, I have a Super Duty diesel F-350, and I love those trucks, and there are a lot of them out there that are, you know, 5-6 years old right now that could be picked up for $18,000, $20,000. They've got, right under 100,000 miles, and for that truck, it's getting broken in at 100,000 miles. So to me, they're a huge, it's a great deal. The Chevy Duramax, the Super Duty Fords, and the Cummins diesel Dodge is one of those three. And then I have a Dodge truck and a Ford truck. So, I mean, there's no better answer than what I actually have.
No, I agree totally. That diesel is a tough motor. I had an 01 with a 7.3 in it, and that thing just runs and runs and runs and runs. As a tough motor.
The one thing I would caution people with on the Super Duties, there's a lot of them out there with the 6.2 diesel. That's what I have. That motor has a bad rap. But every time you read about somebody that's upset with theirs, it's somebody that went, played with it, shipped it, messed with it. It's a dead solid motor if you leave it alone. And that's the big thing with that particular motor. But the one you're mentioning, that's a better choice if you can find one.
Yeah, and that's the key. That's the key right there. If you can find one without, 250,000 miles or 300,000 miles.
Another thing to consider are the CUCVs, the old military diesel trucks, and you can pick those up for about $3,000 and still in pretty good shape. You can get a transmission completely rebuilt for either the Blazer or the pickup for maybe $1,000, and they're pretty bulletproof. And the beauty of those, you can put a lockbox together, go out and buy, an alt main or a starter, a few other parts and some tools, and you'd have a vehicle you could keep running for a very, very long time, and you would have to put a lot of money into it. And they'll run, biodiesel. They'll run a mix of 50% used motor oil and 50% diesel. They'll basically run on anything. And they're older technology, so they're really easy to work on, really easy to get into. And, of course, with being a military vehicle, there's a technical manual for every single aspect of the vehicle. So if you want a low-cost alternative, those are a great way to come.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I used to have one with that 6.2 diesel in it. And, one of the things that I thought was funny was the, I'd do an oil change. My neighbor thought I was crazy, but I'd take that oil and I'd filter it and just dump it right back into the gas tank and just run it on through, and it did just fine. But, those are great motors.
Hey, how's it going, Jack?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
All right. Hey, I want to go back a little bit and throw back what we were talking about. I don't know if you heard what we were talking about prior to you coming on. But,
you mean the battery?
Pardon me?
You mean the battery?
Yeah, the batteries. Well,
okay.
not just the batteries, but, we've kind of instigated last week that we need to start setting up a, not just for us, but kind of throwing it out there on Facebook and everything else so the people who come to the expos can start thinking about it too, a checkup routine. Just going back and making sure all your prep stuff is being rotated and everything else, and just trying to think of the things that we don't think about on a regular basis. Do you have a checkup routine on your gear and things like that? Like, like with batteries and things like that? And what kind of routine do you have set up?
Like you guys were talking about the batteries and testing them for power, and that you've been a battery tester for next enough, and that's a great thing to do frequently. Each component kind of has its own routine, though. It's not like one overall routine. So, like with food, our primary food storage is stuff that we eat every day. So we get a lot of rotation just by eating the food and replacing it and, from front to back. And that's the easiest way to go with, I would say, about 60 to 90 days worth of your food storage. Your long-term food storage, if you're using the stuff like the Mountain House, provide pantry, stuff like that, it's pretty bulletproof. So you might want to continuously make sure everything's actually where you think it is. And if you have that kind of food, I really recommend that once in a while you actually pop a can open and cook with it and learn how to use it now. When it comes to like our bug out bags, a couple times a year we go through them, make sure that anything that's got batteries in it, the batteries come out, fresh batteries go in, and then we'll take those batteries and use them somewhere else in the house. And my big concern with that, and making sure that gets done, is you don't want to reach into your bag, pull out a flashlight when you really need it, and the battery's corroded and the whole thing's destroyed. So that's kind of the big thing there. When it comes to like security, that's something that you kind of and look at every single day. If you have, like, we have motion detectors set up, so we want to make sure that the batteries don't die in those, and that they're frequently replaced. Your everyday carry stuff is something that you're kind of tweaking that as you go. So to me, I don't know. I mean, I have it so engrossed into my lifestyle at this point that it's not like it's a checklist. It's kind of done without a thought, if that makes sense, because it just is what we do. If that makes sense, guys.
No, I think that does. Let me ask you a question. We were talking even before that about we actually had a question that popped up on my page saying I thought you and Jack didn't like each other, and I was stating earlier that no, because we have a kind of an agreement to disagree, and that was like one issue. Not a bunch of them on how to move things forward, but that my wife and I highly respect and listen to your shows on a regular basis because it's good information. Now, here's that's kind of a lead into a question, which is, have you found yourself, because I've noticed in the time that I started listening to you, which was a couple years ago, to now, that your terminology and everything, it has become you. I mean, when you first started out, and everything else, it was a lot of we're testing this, I'm learning, and now you've almost become one of the definitive people to go to get the answer, and I'm sure it's kind of hard to kind of sometimes to think back and not jump into here's what it is mode and go back into here's where I started mode. I mean, do you find that it's becoming just more and more just part of your everyday lifestyle,
and it is hard. It's sometimes like when I'm doing an episode, I do have to hit the rewind button and go back and do a very basic episode and things like that. The other thing is, unlike a lot of podcasters that broadcast weekly, I broadcast daily. So I'm approaching episode 1,000 of the show. And when you teach something that much, you become very, very ingrained with every single thing that you do. If you want to find the best martial artist, find a guy that's been teaching for 20 years, not just a guy that's been practicing for 20 years. So, yeah, it does become very, very ingrained. And it's the reason that I think I'm able to now say, like, this works, is because all of those years of testing, and we had plenty of things that we thought would work, and we did, and they didn't work so well. So when you go through that process, you become a lot more confident. And I'm sure sometimes that comes off as almost like a know-it-all type of thing, but it's really not. If we're still learning new things every day, I just tend to, at this point, I have enough material of stuff that's proven that if I'm working on something, I tend to like prove it out one way or the other. Because one of the things that really bothered me is in the beginning, some people took this to be, proven expertise when I was saying we're testing this, and they would go out and do it, and they would work, and I started to realize that as a broadcaster, you have a certain amount of responsibility. If you tell somebody to do something, they might actually go do it even before it's proven out. So I've tried to rein in some of the theoretical things a little bit at this point until they're proven, because especially now being seen as an authority, I don't want to give somebody information and be misunderstood, and I'm saying I think this might work, and then they go out and do it and rely on it, and then they have a problem. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. And I have to tell you, you've done a pretty good job. There's about, in my opinion, probably about three, four, maybe five men out there that started around the same time frame when everybody started getting into prepping and being self-reliant that have kind of become authorities. And most of them have gotten pretty big heads. And I'm sure that now these people will kind of go, well, I must be one of them. But you've done a pretty good job of being, well, and you know, I like all of them. And I even told this, we had a board meeting recently, and I told everybody on the board, because even some of our people that are on the board are starting to become fairly well known between their radio shows and their books and things like that. And I said, you have to be careful between being humble and being a know-it-all, because as soon as you become a know-it-all, no one wants to listen. And sure. And you've done a very good job, I think, especially since you do a daily show, of keeping the humble pie going. And I know I appreciate that.
I think it's because I talk to my listeners every single day. And so you don't lose connection with the people that you're trying to help. And then things happen that are very humbling. I've had one listener in particular, because of all the homesteading stuff and gardening and stuff like that, used to pull himself out of a funk. He was a returned war veteran, very, very deep depression, that he was this far gone one night as he was laying in bed with his 45 in his mouth. And that, like, all of this stuff about putting your life back together, getting out of debt, living your life, having something that matters in your life, and making that part of preparedness is what pulled him out of that. Well, when you hear from somebody that, like, yeah, you know, when I started the show, could I ever imagine that that's the kind of thing that would happen? When I was at the expo in Denver, this little old lady came up to me. She was about 65 years old, and she had just gone on a disability. And so because she started doing these things over the last year from listening to the show, even though she had lost a lot of her income, she was going to be just fine. You know, and she had tears in her eyes. I got out of the booth, I hugged her. And if you have that kind of interaction, then you realize the only reason you have what you have is because of those people, then that keeps your arrogance in check. Because they're what it's all about. So, I mean, I think that's helped a lot because, like any personality, I have an ego, and you do have to rein it in at times. And then I have a wife that she doesn't care how many people listen to me every day. I'm still just her husband, and she'll tell me to go flip, you know, if she doesn't like what I have to say.
Well, hey, I got a question for you, and this is actually my question, because I caught some information on this on a previous podcast. But tell me a little bit about this. What is it called? Paleo, this caveman diet thing that you guys are doing. Paleo,
Paleo. Paleo is, you know, there's a bunch of different versions of it. Rob Wolf, the guy that I kind of did his work the best. But even he and I disagree a little bit because he's more on all the lean meats, and I'm on get as much back your meat as you can. But here's the funny thing. You know, I was very successful in corporate America before I started doing what I do now. And I was, you know, going about my life in quiet entertainment every night, and I became a fat cat, literally. I was up to 283 pounds. And I had kind of dabbled with the low-carb thing back in the 90s, and I knew a lot of the science behind it. And then when I found the paleo thing and, you know, add things like fermented foods to it, and basically my version of it is I don't eat bread, I don't eat rice, I don't eat wheat, soy, rice, and other grains. And if I do, I eat it in very, very much moderation. And then I eat whatever I want. And I've dropped down to about 200 pounds from 280 pounds. And as a high school football player, I weighed 190 pounds. So I'm thinking at 40 being 200 when I was, you know, 190 at like 17, I don't have much left to really shed at this point. It's probably a little bit around the middle yet, but it's actually changed my life, not just from weight loss, from an energy level and from how I feel and being a better broadcaster, because your energy is part of what you're doing. And every single one of my listeners that's tried it has the same kind of an amazing story. We've had people that, you know, were on medication for type 2 diabetes and started eating this way, and then their doctors were horrified. You know, you're breaking the food pyramid or whatever, and now they're not even on their medication anymore. And Ross had some personal interactions with one of his clients who had full-blown MS that they can't even detect it. Now, I can't say that'll happen for everybody, and I don't give medical advice, but that's a pretty powerful thing. But it just goes back to the concept that for thousands and thousands and thousands of years before modern agriculture, people were mostly hunter-gatherers. And if you think about a hunter-gatherer lifestyle, you're not going to eat a whole lot of starches. You're going to eat meat that you can club. You're going to eat fruits and vegetables in season, and it's kind of emulating that. And when I first started doing it, it was like, okay, now how do I adapt this to prepping? because beans and rice and corn and stuff like that store so well and so cheap. Well, the pretty good people store that stuff because it is a survival ration. And then from a homestead standpoint, it actually makes everything easier. If you think about gardening and livestock and all, the hard stuff that grows all the grains, wheat, oats, I mean, that's tough stuff to grow on a homestead. So by focusing on all the other things, like the integrated straight into prepping, and like I said, everybody that's done it is just blown away by the results. I haven't heard from anybody that did that and sucked. And I have heard people that said, well, I did it in the first couple of days, sucked. Like, it's like, well, if you quit using heroin, the first couple of days sucked too. And it really is breaking the sugar addiction, because all starches just go straight over to sugar. And at that point, they push the blood glucose level up. And from a weight loss perspective, once your blood glucose level goes past 18 microliters, your body cannot burn fat. It absolutely can't do it while that sugar is elevated. And most of the starches will push you there. The glycemic index is just nonsense, honestly. It doesn't matter how long it takes to get there. The fact that you're there just stops fat burning dead cold.
Huh. You know, I saw that picture of that, what was it, a roast or something you had the other day that you, you posted up. Man, I tell you what, I was ready to change my diet right then and there when I saw that picture. I don't care what it was. That was delish. That looked good, man.
Well, I mean, Rob's case in his book, the Paleo Diet, is that you could do anything for 30 days. You could go to jail for 30 days if you had to. If somebody said, I'll give you $10 million to go sit in jail for 30 days, you'd probably be like, okay. So you can try anything for 30 days. So his whole case in his book is just do it and do it hardcore for 30 days. Get past the first week where it's going to suck. See how you feel at the end of 30 days. And then you can start adding some things back in, or you can throw my plan away if you want to, but give it a shot. So I'd say give it a shot, because nothing has changed my life from a health standpoint the way this has.
So Colorado, you going to give it a try?
Dude, with all that beef up there, why not, man? There's beef everywhere up there. You know, you walk across the street and you knock a cow over.
That's true. You know what?
Yeah,
I might just try
that. But he convinced
his
wife to make all this bread.
Yeah, that's true. My wife makes killer bread. But I'll have to, I'm going to get the book and read it here and check it out a little closer.
Okay.
All right. Well, so hopefully, Jack, we'll have to convince him by the Dallas show, and maybe we'll start clocking him from the Dallas show and see how he does.
Yeah, we could do that. Hey, I got a great tip for you guys. You were talking about the batteries when I was hanging on, waiting for you guys to bring me on. Here's a really cool way to have tons of batteries always charged up. Go to Walmart, get those cheap little like $2 solar lights. Buy a bunch of those. And the first thing you do is take the battery that's in them out of them and throw it away, because it's junk. Get good rechargeable batteries, pop them back in. You need a Phillips screwdriver. They all take double A's. Pop a good double A in there, set them all out in your garden. At any given time, you've got a couple dozen, maybe three or four dozen, if you want that many lights out in your garden lighting everything up, fully charged batteries. And if you get into a point where you need to use them sustained, you put them in the lights, set them out during the day, and just pluck them back out at night so that they're not running. And you can keep them charged up that way infinitely. And
oh,
see, that's a big redundancy thing. Like, that's what I'm always trying to challenge people to do. And a lot of my great ideas come from audience members to think about this stuff. You know, how can I take stuff I'm going to do anyway and turn it into a preparedness aspect of things?
That's actually a very good idea. I like that.
Yeah, but don't rely on the ones that come in there. The little red ones from China that are in that, those lights are just garbage. So you got to get rid of them.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. So I'm gonna jump topics on this real quick, Jack, because you talk about different things when you do your shows, and I'm really really interested in your opinion on what's going on with the economy right now. I mean, just day before yesterday, you know, we had three more banks, including Bank of America, one of our largest banks, Moody's downgraded them. You've got all this stuff going on over at over in Greece, and you know the problems over in Europe. And I mean, you know, I'm just kind of curious, because you don't, you know, you cover everything and just talk about being prepared in general. But yeah, it's getting pretty scary right now from an economic situation. And I'd love to hear your opinion on it.
Well, I mean, part of it I could just put into you while we're on the road today. We're looking to buy some property back in Texas, and we were planning on doing it. in the early spring of 2013. And I'm looking at some of the stuff going on with the banks being downgraded and all, and I'm worried about lending season up. So we can get the mortgage now. The interest rate is stupid cheap. You know, it's like 3.5% on a 30-year fix. So we're accelerating that purchasing timeline, specifically because I'm concerned with lending freezing up. We're getting more difficult. I don't see the interest rates going up, but it doesn't matter if the interest rate's zero if you can't get a loan, right? So that's one concern I have, and that will be one of the first things that begins kind of like pulling a thread. If you start seizing up lending, and this is why the Fed is putting so much monopoly money to stave that off, the entire economy grinds to a halt. Now, I mean, make no mistake about this. This monopoly economy that we're dealing with, the people that are running it have every interest in keeping it going. So they will pump as much electricity into the Frankenstein monster for as long as possible to keep it going, but they can only do so much. I'm not one of these people that says, okay, by, you know, this date, it's going to collapse. I'm just a person that can do math. And I can look at our runaway debt. I can look at all of this stuff and say, sooner or later, this whole thing has to have a reset button hit. So what I actually see happening to the economy, and I just don't know what it'll look like exactly when it does, is eventually you have to rebase the currency. And we've done that five times since 1900. We did it with the 1913 with the introduction of the Federal Reserve. We did it in 1933 with Roosevelt with the going off the gold standard and going like just changing basically what the gold standard was. We did it with leaving the silver standard with the coinage act of 1965. And then we did it again in a way in the 70s when Nixon separated us from the last vestiges of the gold standard. And then when the American public was allowed to buy gold in 75 and they opened the gold window, then you really saw everything decouple. And each one of those times looked different, and all of them were bad, and all of them sucked. And we're at a point now where the only play is to go to a global-controlled or maybe five or six large regional fiat currencies or turn back to a commodity-backed currency. And this is what people really need to understand. It doesn't matter what the change is, but we don't get to be in control of the change, so guess who suffers? And that's us. And what happens every time this happens is the money that you're holding gets devalued. So that's, like, my immediate short-term concern is the economic recession 2.0 due to seized up lending. My long-term concern is the currency rebasement. And does that look like Greece today, or does it look like Argentina, or does it look like the breakup of the Soviet Union? And the answer is, I'm not Nostradamus, and I don't know. But I think we can look at those economies and realize that whatever we go through here is going to be worse because since the entire world is pegged to the dollar in a way, when we go, there's nowhere to bail out to. There's no one to jump ship to. And, I mean, as a very patriotic American to serve my country, it kills me to say this, but the days of this country being the economic superpower of the world are waning, and China is just sitting, you know, just gaining. It's like watching a runner in a 1.5 mile race, and he's in the last half mile, and you can see that number two guy has just got his stride, and he's just catching them all the way. And you can look at the balance sheets of the two countries, and you can see that we have the most debt, and they have the most capital. And if we switch back to a commodity-backed currency, then the people with debt lose, and the people with capital win. And that's China has positioned themselves perfectly for that. So I know that's kind of all over the place, but that's the bigger problem. That's the one that nobody's talking about. Because will Europe fall apart? Probably not this year because they'll pump as much dadgone money. Our Fed will open up the lending vault, and our Fed will start shoving money in there as soon as the election's over, no matter which guy wins. They just can't do it right now.
Right. And I agree with you on a couple different things there specifically. And you did bounce all over, but it's all good information. Is, you know, people don't realize, because you hear on the radio that China's pulling back and everything else. China has stockpiled about 80% of the things that are on the commodities market. If they don't currently own most of the assets, they've bought tons of it and have stored it. Copper, gold. I mean, you name it. I mean, the largest mine in the world has been found in Mongolia for copper and several other things, and China instantly goes up and buys up the next 20 years' worth of futures on it.
And, yeah, they're buying the heck out of Africa, too.
Yeah, and they physically
own half of Africa by now.
Yeah, and the thing that most people don't realize, these people, I mean, they're geniuses in the way that they've handled it. And I spent, you know, probably one-third of my year over in Asia, is that they actually stockpile the hard product. They are less interested in dealing with all the theoretical and the virtual, and they realize, like you said, that when things come down to it and we go to a hard commodities market, they want the physical asset owned.
Well, and if there's problems and you have a commodity stockpile, they're prepping, guys. I mean, if you really want to look at it that way, China has become the largest prepper on the planet. If you have all this stuff stockpiled and nobody else has any, guess what? You become completely capable of being self-sustaining for a period of time, and you become the only source of the product, so now you can sell it. So they're playing chess with the economy, and unfortunately, our leadership seems like they're playing checkers at like a fourth-grade level when I look at the two differences there. Another big thing that they did, you might be aware of this, Scott, is that they used to have a law that their citizens could not own silver. Well, a few years ago, they repealed that law, so their citizens could buy silver, and they didn't just repeal the law. They basically came out with a government edict that said, go buy silver. So China's become a major buyer of silver at the consumer level, and they're, you know, you got a billion, 1.7 billion people or whatever it is, and you got about a half a billion of them that are, you know, what we would call getting toward the middle class. So you got a half a billion people stockpiling silver in small quantities. So they're preparing their citizenry, not just their nation.
No, you're right, and he's exactly right. When I go over there, in the past 10 years, you have seen a massive amount of department stores or stores open up where you can go in and you can buy it. But every bank in China, you can walk in and you can convert your yen or your RMB into silver. So the actual banks will pay you out in silver currency. If you want to go ahead and cash in and do and get silver currency,
so they're already setting that up. They're already getting their people used to it. They're already conditioning them for it. Where we're over here just in denial, saying don't worry about it. There's nothing to see. It'll be fine. We'll just print some more money. And they don't even print the money anymore. They just type it into a computer. And hell, the money they print about a year ago, they printed like $150 million in $100 bills, and they printed them all wrong. And they had to burn it. So they can't even print it right anymore.
You're right. I go over there, and this is, I'm going to do, well, actually, let's hold that thought, and we'll come back on China. Let's go ahead and cut to a quick commercial break so we can run through after that. Jack, do you want to go ahead and, if you want to go ahead and stop and call us back in 5 minutes, so that way you can save the battery on your phone, or you can hold, either way.
I'll hold. I got a cord.
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be back with Jack Spearco.
Yeah.
Okay, well, apparently Steve has not taken us to break.
I'm still here, guys.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor. Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going or what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Right, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain and that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson. And it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not.
Now, get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the Freeze Dry Guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
You're back with Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed, with Colorado Ron, Bubba Da Vinci, and our guest, Jack Spierko of the Survival Podcast. You there, Jack?
I'm here.
All right. Well, what I was saying before we went on break, which I think would be interesting for most people, because when you watch the news, it's always very slanted and everything else, but the Chinese economy, the government is doing a great job also of building up what we had, you know, in the early industrial age, which is a spending economy. You know, and just 6 years ago, it would have been one in every 100 people had a computer, and maybe one in every 500 to 800 people would have a phone, a cell phone. And now if you went to China this week and took a look at it, it's one in three have a laptop computer or a computer with them that they own in their home, and one out of every two have more than two cell phones in their possession.
Yep. And, you know, we talked about the silver thing, and one of the things that's also going on over there is there are a lot of people out in the countryside that are still in the poor rural class, and yet those guys are stockpiling copper. And that's a very historical thing as well, that copper's been a poor man's money. And it would take a lot for it to happen again, but it could happen. And it also just shows the concept of it's durable and has value, and you have space for it, and you get your hands on it and put it away. That's the whole grasshopper mentality those guys seem to have gotten over there.
I agree. So I have one last question on economics, then I'm going to let Ron jump in, because I'm sure he's chomping at the bit to get to his favorite topic, which is... You know, are you familiar with the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA?
Actually, no. Is this a new thing, or is this what got us all
No. You were talking about the 70s, and you know, we were talking about it last night. It's in my opinion something, and maybe you can look it up, and it'd be something that you cover because you do that stuff very well. They basically in the 70s they passed this right law ERISA, which is basically what created the 401k tax deferred savings program.
Okay.
And although most people realize it. What's getting my wife and I nervous, and we're kind of looking at this thing with the way the economy is going, which is the law is written that when a person, and this was enacted for the baby boomers, you know, the whole 401k thing, and people have put a lot of money in there, and how basically 401k works is all that money gets invested in the stock market. Well, when these baby boomers turn 70 and a half years old, by law, they have to start drawing on that money. It means they have to take it out of the retirement fund. They have to.
Correct.
They don't
Correct.
Have a. And in we are just 4 years away from the first group of baby boomers having to pull all that money out of the stock market. Almost 2.5 million people yanking all their money out of the stock market.
That's a big concern, and it's something I've been talking about for a long time, and it almost makes you wonder if, you know, if you let your conspiracy hat go on for a second, if there's a reason that they've kind of screwed things up for people with their retirement where they feel like they have to stay invested, because it is true that I have to remove the money from the investment vehicle, but I can then do anything I want to with the money, and I'll bet you that there's tons of, you know, Edward Jones associates out there right now going through specialized training to tell all your old clients to take their money out and then put it right back into the market outside of that, that tax-deferred status. I believe that is a plan. I've heard it from enough investment advisors that, you know, they don't want their clients all bailing out of the market, especially the ones that have sizable assets. But I don't think you can backfill it fast enough, because a lot of these people are going to say, well, I've waited this long for it. It's time to go buy a motorhome or whatever. Now, the other side of that, if those people take that money and start spending it on those big retirement expenses, that's actually a good thing. Because even though they're pulling their money out of the market, they're fueling the spending back into the economy, and they're doing it without debt. So that then creates a whole new cash flow that creates more investment in the market. And that's like Russian roulette. You've got three bullets, three chambers, and three empty ones, and you don't know how it's going to end when the cylinder's done spinning. My bigger concern for 401s and IRAs right now is that the government is looking at that money literally salivating and saying, look at all this horror that happened in the stock market and all. And what they're wanting to do is create a new version of these things where some portion of the money you put in there is literally forced into government securities that would guarantee you a payment, you know, like a government annuity till you die using your own money. And I know a lot of people when that first started getting serviced, but that's what they always do. They float the idea and see how well it floats and figure out how to sell it when they eventually bring it out. People started freaking out. Should I cash in early, pay the penalties, and get my money out of there? And my answer was no. I don't think they'll ever do it with all of the money that's already in there. They'll make it an option. They'll scare old people into doing it, right? But what they'll have to do is give people a choice of the existing money. But I can see a day when those accounts flip over and become something that when you put money in there, not only is it regulated, but it's on some level controlled by government. And it's one of the reasons that I'm always telling people with your retirement savings, if you're saving 10%, put 5% outside of these retirement vehicles. I don't even care if you buy the same security with it. Put it somewhere where it's not tax deferred. Pay the flipping taxes on it, because at least that money you can get to if you need it without the government getting in the way. And it's another reason people are all big on the silver and gold in your IRAs. Don't do physical metal in a freaking IRA. Take the most anonymous money in the world and make it the most regulated money in the world. If you want silver and gold in an IRA, that's what an ETF is for.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. All right, Colorado, I took up a large segment, so you can jump on your topic now.
Permaculture. Let's talk. Is that a big jump? That was a crazy jump, huh? Going from financial to permaculture. But I have a question for you. Obviously, every region is a little bit different. And so I know that when you go out and you talk about permaculture, having to know a little bit about each region and everything's just a little bit different in each region. Like what grows here might not do so well in Arkansas or vice versa. So how do you keep track of all that, first of all?
Well, I mean, the deeper you get, the more of the answers you find. So one thing is that you do look at landscape profile and climate as part of the design. But on the most fundamental level, the thing about permaculture is not a recipe, right? That says, okay, plant one of these, two of these, three of those. It's a system of principles, and these design-based principles. For instance, one would be relative location. That everything that I put into a design, and this might be a livestock component, it might be a planting, it could be anything, but it's not just I don't just plant a tree in front of the house because I want shade on the house. That's just one relationship. I need to be creating multiple relationships with that tree. So the leaves fall off, so I know that it's going to let sun through at certain parts of the year. It's going to create a wind block. And every single element that I stick in there has to go tie back into this relative location principle. And there's about 34 of these principles. And by the time you understand those principles, and then you understand the basic concepts of permaculture from an ethics standpoint, which is we don't do things that harm people. We don't do things that harm the land. And then when we create a surplus, we reinvest that back into the system. It doesn't matter if I'm in Colorado. It doesn't matter if I'm in Pennsylvania or Florida. The exact that I plant might be different, but the structures and the relationships that I'm going to do are going to be exactly the same. So in the tropics, maybe they plant what they would call a banana circle. Well, up here, we're not going to grow bananas, but we can emulate that design form, and do the same thing. So in a banana circle, we throw a whole bunch of organic matter into basically a pit, plant a circle of banana trees around it. Well, we don't have to plant banana trees around that. We can plant something like apple trees around it. So it's just about, yeah, we're going to have to fine-tune certain things. And in a dry climate, certain plants do better than a humid climate and vice versa. So the planting will change, but the design and the principles will be the same. It's just like becoming an architect. You're going to build a building the same way, but you might use different building materials. There's not a whole lot of stucco buildings in Florida for good reasons, but the architect will design the frame of the building very, very similar.
Okay. So the one big push that I always talk about is, I'm sure a lot of your listeners as well as a lot of our listeners still, you know, they think, some of them think that they have to go out and own 5, 10, 20 acres. And then a lot of them can't do that or are unable to do that at this point. And, you know, fact of the matter is there's still a large portion of people that still live in neighborhoods. But this can still be applied in a neighborhood, right?
Yeah. In fact, one of the best DVDs that anybody can get their hands on is a DVD called Urban Permaculture by Jeff Lawton. And you watch that DVD, and even if you live in the country like I do now, you almost want to go live in the suburbs. Because when you realize what can be done with these small spaces, it's really unbelievable. One thing to think about is if we take a quarter acre suburban typical lot, and then we put a house in the front of it, we create tons of little microclimates. One side's going to be very shaded, one side's going to be very hot. There's the land in a suburban house, the land will always flow both to the front and the back of the house, but the builder will do it that way to keep water off the foundation. So I'm going to have water flows that I can work with that are automatically going to be there 99% of the time. So I can put water tanks in and create gravity-fed irrigation, which means if the power goes out, the time that I most need my garden that I'm living off of partly, it doesn't die because there's no water available. And every single thing that you can do at, you know, a five-acre design level, you can do down in the suburb level. You guys might have seen my videos I've been doing on permaculture recently. And I have the one that will be released next week that basically goes through a design of a quarter-acre lot, a 60-foot by 160-foot lot. And when you realize how much can be put in there, you're almost blown away. I have 5 acres in Arkansas now. We're looking for about 20 back in East Texas, but it's because I want to do classes and bigger things like this. We were actually managing about 3/4 of an acre, and we had so much food the other day, even though we store food, dehydrated, and what have you. We're like, we have more than we even want to mess with right now. My wife sent 2 big bags of food down to the local church, and that's all 3/4 of an acre. And if you've seen pictures of it, it's not exactly soil that the farmers would be clamoring for. But it's all about good fertility building and following principles of design. And I think that, I mean, the biggest thing a person can do is look up those principles and start to really understand them, and you start to realize that they're very, very elegant. There's also a principle in permaculture that's kind of an unwritten principle that Lawton talks about all the time, that actually the smaller the land and the more restrictions on you, if you truly follow these design principles, the more elegant the design will be, which seems completely backwards. But every time you place a limitation, you have to think more. So in conventional agriculture, there's probably about 11 hours of work to every hour of thinking. And with permaculture, we want to flip that around, so we're doing about 11 hours of thinking for about every 1 hour of work. And we want to build these very resilient systems, heavily based on perennials, reseeding annuals, and for our annuals that we're going to be planting and get heirloom vegetables, so we're not depending on anybody else for seed. And we want to do as little work as possible, so we want to automate functions like irrigation. Everybody thinks it's very primitive. And a lot of the techniques are primitive, but you got to think about, you know, 1,000 years ago trying to grow rice in China. Yeah, they might have been primitive, but they couldn't afford to be moving buckets around. They had to open up one slough box and flood one field and open another and drain it back out. And we can do all of these things even on small spaces in urban areas.
Now, I mean, that's a lot of great information, and I'm sure people are going to be just chomping at the bit on where to find this stuff. So what are some of the best websites? And you mentioned the DVD. Who makes that DVD so that we can get people looking at this stuff?
Yeah, I would get, honestly, if you really want to learn more about this, I would get, there's a 5-pack of Jeff Lott's DVDs available at the Permaculture Institute of Australia, and that's permaculture.org.au. And that's a great place to start. There's another website called permacultureglobal.com that Jeff's group put out. and it's people doing projects all over the world. You can register your site, track your site, show people what you're doing, and you could spend days just, and I think that's one of the biggest ways to learn permaculture is to look at what other people have done. Because all of a sudden you realize this little technique can be changed and adapted to your situation. And of course, being a shameless self-promoter, if you go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and stick permaculture in the search box, you'll find probably 40 or 50 episodes that I've done on the subject.
Oh, nice. Okay. Good, good. That's good to know. Now, the other question I had was, you said that this can be done in an urban environment, and it made you kind of want to do it that way. I personally have about a third of an acre, and I need to feed 8 people. Is that doable?
Probably not on 100% level. You could probably produce more of whatever you're producing than those 8 people would ever need, and then that gives you the opportunity to use some of it for barter if somebody's producing something else. One of the big things that you need to look at when you're using these small spaces is how can I maximize the production of protein? So, I mean, in that environment, I would definitely be looking at things like rabbits and then chickens for their eggs, because that'll give you a significant amount of daily protein capability. But especially in Colorado, with as little rainfall as you get up there, it's going to be difficult. You can do it. There's a lot of things that you would have to do it really well that would probably technically be breaking the Colorado law, like creating the whole back of your rainfall if you do get your snow done. You get,
okay, hey Jack, we're starting to get you a little in and out now, so I'm gonna ask one last question, and we're gonna let you wrap up, and we'll touch base with you again here pretty soon. So you're going to be at the Dallas event in Arlington, July 27th to 28th. One of the topics, and you've done this before at our other event, is your 12 planks. Can you let people know what that is and basically what they can look forward to when they see you there at the event? Hello, Jack?
Yep, I think we lost him.
All right. Well, there we go. And that's the reason why I was trying to get to that last question. So if he comes back on, we'll pop on for a second and get that last question in. But that's okay. Yeah, for people, I want to make sure this is clear. I think Jack is a fantastic guy. He's got a lot of information. For the most part, I think that having someone like him that has set opinions and everything else is good, because people that are confident in what they say, people listen. I don't necessarily always agree with, and you shouldn't. The reason why we have the Self-Reliance Expo and Regid Media Group is to offer lots and lots of people's opinions on different things, and then it's your job to decide what makes the most sense for you. I mean, that's kind of what this whole thing's about.
Right.
Are you there?
Yeah, he's there.
I'm here.
I hear him. All right.
All right. So we're gonna hit you with one last question, and then we're gonna let you go, so that way you can get finished up on your trip since you're bouncing back in and out. So my question was, you're gonna be coming to the Dallas event on the 27th, 28th. One of your topics that you did at the other events, and you're doing again, is your 12 planks. Can you tell people what that is and what they can expect?
Sure. When I first started doing the show, I looked at the history of the preparedness industry, and I saw a boom and bust cycle. And every time there was a major event, Y2K probably being the biggest one, that there would be this big boom created around the industry. And then whenever that catastrophic event was, didn't happen, everybody went back to sleep. And I watched and I looked through and saw businesses that followed the same cycle. And you look at some books and you see companies that were mentioned prior to Y2K, they don't exist today. And I went, that's not how I build businesses. That's not what I'm going to do. And I want to really help people. So my concept was that I needed to come up with something that if you followed my philosophy, that even if you never had any major disasters in your life, and you'll have minor ones definitely in anybody's life, that you would be better off. So that came up with the whole tagline of the show that anchors the whole 12 planks of philosophy, and that is every single thing that you do to prepare for a disaster or an emergency today to benefit you today and tomorrow, even if nothing goes wrong. Living a better life if times get tough, or even if they don't, is, you know, summing it up in a tagline. And then I built this philosophy off of that so that, okay, now how do we construct a very resilient lifestyle that benefits us today? And if we follow that lifestyle, we end up very, very well off, and we end up very, very resilient, and we don't end up with a garage full of MREs that we're laughed at by our brother-in-law for every time he comes over, and we don't even want to eat the daggone things in emergency because we happen to buy all the ones from 1990 with a number 2 on them, and they're omelet with ham. So by coming to my presentation, you'll get the foundation of what created the Survival Podcast, what everything's based on. We'll talk about defending yourself. We'll talk about growing your own food. We'll talk about storing food. We'll talk about disaster probability and disaster impact and their inverse relationship. But then we'll talk about some mundane things like, you know, saving for your future, your retirement, your insurance, and putting together a comprehensive plan so that your life can stay on course as best possible no matter what comes your way. Now, I can't guarantee you success in the middle of a catastrophic failure of everything on the planet. But what I can tell you is if you do these things, no matter what happens, you'll be better off than those who did not. And you won't have to completely flip your life upside down and do it. Now, you might find yourself drastically changing your life, but you'll do it your way in your time, because that's also one of the tenets, that everything you do has to be your plan and you have to own it. I'll give you the information. Lots of other people will give you the information. You take the philosophy and you design a plan for your family around it. So that's what I'll be speaking about.
Wonderful. And just so everybody knows, Jack will be speaking on the Men of Prepping panel on Friday the 27th from 12:30 in the afternoon until 14:30, which is 2:30 for you civilians. We also will have Joe Alton, which is Dr. Bones from Doom and Bloom, and we will have Southern Prepper One up on that stage with you. And that'll be real exciting. And then on Saturday, Jack will be speaking from 9:30 to 10:30 on his 12 Planks of Modern Survivalism. So we're looking forward to having you there, Jack.
I'm looking forward to seeing you guys again.
Yeah, and you know something? This time, let's have a beer and get a picture taken so that way everybody doesn't think we hate each other. And then we can kind of move on from there.
I'll even pick up the tab at the bar.
Nice. All right. Hey, we appreciate you coming on, and you and your wife have a safe journey, and I hope you guys find a nice piece of property out there.
All right, we'll do. Have a good day, guys.
Take
all right,
care,
for having me on.
You bet. Well, there you have it, Jack.
Yeah, there you go. The infamous and famous Jack Spearco. Yeah.
he's a great guy. I mean, anybody that's pushing 1,000 podcasts, it has to have learned something along this journey. You know what I mean?
I'm going to tell you something funny. When I started listening to him, I listened to Jack one day a week, and I mean, I listened to all his podcasts, and some I'm interested in, some I'm not. I'll be honest, but what I do is when I get up on Saturday mornings, what I'll do is I'll take the ones that he's done during the week, and I'll sit out on the porch and have a cup of coffee or whatever I'm drinking that morning, and I listen, because it gets my head going for topics for our show and things like that, and it's a good way to do it. I don't think I can't set up a routine where I listen to him each day, because I'd never get anything done, because Jack is so it's true, he's so passionate about the things he talks about that. When you listen to his podcast, you instantly get into thinking about that topic, and I would be running around either analyzing, researching, or doing the things that he suggested. Because, like I said, I'm always very honest about the stuff that we talk about. I don't always agree with not only him, but with a lot of the things that the guys do. I liked it, and I highly recommend it to everybody, and I think Jack would probably do it too, is do your own research. He just said it a second ago. Only you can own what you do. Colorado Ron and I make a suggestion, if Jackie Clay makes a suggestion on our show, if you decide to do it, you've got to own that, because what Jack does in his prepping might not work for you. We all live in different areas. We all come from different religious backgrounds. We all come from all different socioeconomic
backgrounds. Yeah, we have different scenarios. Yeah, we all have different scenarios. I mean, you know, he has a different, you know, different amount of family members than I do, you know, so everything's different a little bit, you know, so you gotta grab it and go with it for you. I agree.
Right. But I think it's good that he points that out, because I hear and I read a lot of people that say, you said this, or Jack said that, or, you know, Vicky Lynn said that, or whoever it is, and then trying to pigeonhole us in, you know, and all we're doing is giving out information. You know, we we're hoping that some of the stuff that we're dropping down, you pick up and it's useful. And it doesn't make any sense when these people want to point fingers and say, you said to buy this gun and this was going to work for me. No. That's not how it works.
Right.
You know? And like his vehicles. I mean, I agree with him on the Cuck V, which is what they're called. CUCV, Cuck Vs. We used them when I was in the military. And basically, they're great. The downside of those vehicles, I'll make the comment, they're great in certain areas. They were great in North Carolina. I think they would probably be pretty good up here, but they were lousy in the sand. So I wouldn't be highly recommending one of them for Nevada or necessarily Arizona or something. I mean, that's my personal opinion. Every time I got it out in the sand, we got them stuck, which is why they went to us. They also flip easy.
Yeah. Well, the main reason for that is, honestly, is the tire selection on those. If you change the tire selection, it would help out a lot. So the military uses those bias ply tires and all that stuff. And the problem with those is they're so hard, they're not soft enough, and they don't flex. And they're built to run through 90% of what you've got to do and get it done. You know, I mean, the problem with that is, you know, different areas require different, you know, like you said, different, you know, different needs. And so the tire selection would make a huge difference on those CUCVs.
Yeah. Anyway, everything's an opinion. And I think he's like, for someone that does a lot of driving and everything else, that the diesel VWs are fantastic.
Absolutely.
You take what everybody says. You make your own decision. What makes sense? Like, I'm a Dodge guy. You know, I'd never buy a Ford, but that's just me. But yeah, just like anything else, you know, I think he puts out fantastic information. I love his 12 planks thing. He did it for us in Colorado, right? Did you do the 12 planks in Colorado?
Yeah. Yep. He did it in Colorado.
And it was standing room only. So the reason I'm stating this, people, is if you're coming to our show in July in Arlington, Texas, you know, it's 100 seats there. And unfortunately, this show, we've got a limited number of speaking slots. You know, it's not like our normal shows where we have three stages and we can get people on sometimes two or three times. You're going to get one opportunity to listen to Jack. Well, two, one each day. But on that topic, 12 planks. And if you are just getting into your prepping and everything else, highly recommended class to come in and sit and listen to. And I'm going to post it today on Facebook. I'm just starting to post all the speakers on Facebook with the schedules. So go to Self Reliance Expo on Facebook and you'll start, and you can click on calendar of events and you'll start seeing them up there. Looking forward to having Jack there and listening to him, because he's definitely got his stuff together and has been highly successful.
No, I agree. I agree. And, you know, we got a whole panel of great people. And, you know, it's always fun to watch as we're creating the next expo and the lineup and the presentation schedule. It's always fun to watch that come together, because it's just amazing the amount of talent that we're able to pull into one room. It's awesome. I just love it.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to get someone other than, I mean, I think Jack is talking on the panel about kind of about the permaculture angle of it. I don't know if we've officially, I was going to state the name of the class, but I don't think we've officially named it yet. I didn't get an email back saying, yes, we'll name it this. So I'll let you know what the class is here shortly, or not the class, but the topic he's covering on the panel.
Okay.
But I think it would be interesting to get someone that just specifically covers permaculture as a standalone speaker. Yeah, because I think that's a I think that's an up and coming and great topic that a lot of people are looking at.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Well, let's let's look for it and see if we can't find somebody. I don't see why we can't.
So on other speakers, let me just ask a question. Have we gotten Dr. Christopher? Is he a go?
Dr. Christopher unfortunately had a date conflict, but he is sending somebody in his place that is kind of his a mentor to him. So I mean he's pretty doggone knowledgeable. He'll be a master herbalist as well, which is I think the highest rank that you can get. So he'll be a master herbalist and he'll be taking his place.
Okay, so I'm just asking. You know, we've got a pretty good. We haven't locked all the lineup yet, and we're being again. Like I said, we have limited spots on this, so I'm being very very slow at posting things up there because I want to make sure that we get a good crossover. You know, but we will have Jackie Clay there, which is great. We'll have Doc Bones and Nurse Amy both doing their suturing classes, and actually speaking on survival medicine. We will have Michael D. Wiener, who is from Swiss America, talking on the future of money. That's a great class if you guys will be able to participate. Our buddy Jeff Yago will be going over why a generator alone won't do it. You know, the topic is prepper power, which I really like Jeff's stuff. He's a solar guru, and it's good to have him on. And that's
nice.
Just a few. I don't want to. I mean, it's going. I think this is going to be highly successful, and a lot of good information to get out there.
No, I agree, and it's so funny to watch the lineup because it's kind of a catch-22 for me. I love it, and it makes me mad at the same time because I can't listen to them. We're always running around on the at the event, and I never have time to just sit and listen to some of these presentations, and it's really kind of frustrating.
I agree with you because, you know, here we are doing our radio show and doing all this other stuff, and we end up, not only on the show but on the expos, being the ones that don't get to participate and get the information. I mean, it's just... you have all that talent in one place, and you never get to participate. That's kind of a sad state of affairs.
I know. It's like, oh, thank you for doing this. Thank you for doing it. It's great, and I learned so much. Oh, tell me what you learned, because I didn't get to listen.
Yeah,
that's kind of
exactly.
How I feel all the time. Oh well.
No, I agree with you. I totally agree with you. So let me ask you a question, Colorado. We got a lot of good information from Jack and. And we also have Southern Prepper 1 there. How do you think the personalities are going to match up there?
Well, you know what's interesting is, on one hand, everybody's kind of the alpha male, but on the other hand, everybody it's their first time meeting, and everybody likes to learn. What I noticed about Southern Prepper when I met him, David, is that he was just sitting there, as much information as he was giving, I thought it was very impressive that he would lean forward and listen to everything I said and as well. So, I mean, it was taking, it was going both ways. So I agree totally that, you know, that, that they're all alpha males, but I also think that they are open to learning new things and excited to hear from each other. That's my take.
And I want to agree, but you know, it was really funny at the last event when we had the women of prepping to see, because all these people are experts on I hate to use the word experts. I take that back. None of them are experts on anything. That puts too much pressure on them. I've been told that a couple of times. All these guys are so knowledgeable on so many different topics, and again have completely different opinions sometimes on the same topic, that when a question comes up, you see them all like scooting, you know, okay, this question is for, you know, Nurse Amy. And so she stands up and they ask the question. And then you see all the other women scoot up in their seats because they want to answer it too, because they might have a different opinion. And they were so polite. I mean, they handled it so well. You know, It'll be interesting to see how the men, and we did that on purpose. We selected the women first because we were hoping that we'd be able to test the waters and see, because getting, and one of the things we decided from that test was we cannot have five personalities on the stage at the same time, because that was just too much to manage. So we narrowed it down to three, and we're hoping that, you know, although I think these guys all respect and like each other, it's hard not to throw out your opinion when you believe something different than someone else does.
Yes.
So,
no, hey, I agree.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, Colorado, and then when we come back, we'll go ahead and get ready to close this show out, cover the last 20 minutes.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, three commercials, guys. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specification in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast, and I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours, too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com. And Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them that Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Hey, meat eaters. The freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus meat eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Hey, old Dr. Bones here. Are you prepared to deal with medical issues in a disaster situation? What would you do if medical help was not on the way? The Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook is over 400 pages of how-to advice written in plain English. You'll learn to handle all the likely medical issues you'll encounter in times of trouble. And it's not just a conventional medical wisdom. We talk about alternatives like essential oils, medicinal herbs, and other home remedies. Make the Doom and Bloom Survival Medicine Handbook a part of your survival library. And don't forget, Nurse Amy and I have medical kits, suture materials, instructional DVDs, and other items that will help you keep it together even if things fall apart. Check them out, as well as 200 articles on medical preparedness, survival gardening, and other alternative remedies on our website at www.doomandbloom.net. Never think doom and gloom, think doom and bloom.
Thanks for listening to A Word from Our Sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci. Did you make it there, Colorado?
I'm here.
All right. Hey, you know, I want to throw some things out there before we close out this hour, because I'm hoping that we can get some assistance, and I'd like to also hear what you think. We do these events. We have three events left for this year. We have Arlington, Texas, which is July 27th, 28th. We have Hickory, North Carolina, which I'm tremendously looking forward to. We've got so many friends out there that are in that area. We've got Vicky Lynn. We've got Donna Miller. I don't even want to go down the list completely because we'll miss so many people. So many people live in that area, including like Southern Prepper One and Such and all those people. And we've never done anything that far east, so I'm looking forward to that event. And then that's September 14th and 15th. And then October 26th and 27th, we have an event in Mesa, Arizona. And, you know, I've been going crazy on Facebook, you know, trying to chat with people and talk with people and spend a little more time to kind of get what's out there. And we've always done a little bit of the, you know, where we let, especially like with Jack Spearco and things like that, where we let them bring their communities and get in a little bit early and get to meet the people. I think it would be cool if we set up a meet and greet area at these events, and people can, you know, from these different Facebook groups or different local prepping groups and everything else, can, you know, set a time to not only meet each other and you know, and get to see each other face to face and talk and come and enjoy the event together, but maybe if they send us an email or we set up a system and say, hey, if you'd like to do a meet and greet and you've got 10 to 15 people, what you'd like to do it, set up where they could actually shake hands with someone like a Jack Spearco or a Jackie Clay or things like that, and have them come over and meet those people. What do you think?
I agree. I think that would be cool.
You know, because I think that a lot of these people, they come over and they stand in line for a book signing or things like that, but they don't necessarily get the opportunity to meet. And I'll tell you what, Jack is a very pleasant person just to walk up and talk to. You know, very approachable. Jackie Clay, my wife loves Jackie. She is such a friendly person. She laughs and talks to everybody, you know, and so – but I don't think, and quite frankly, so is Vicky Lynn and Donna. I mean, we met with them at breakfast one time, and just incredibly pleasant and wonderful people. But I don't think, I think most people probably wouldn't approach most of them when if they were at the event for fear that they were interrupting or that, you know, they wouldn't want to be talked to or things like that. And so I think it would give people the ability to not only, like I said, meet each other, but meet these wonderful people.
No, I agree. I think that that's a good point. We've tried to do that a little bit in the past, and I think that if we can pull it off and do that, I think that a lot of people would appreciate it because it gives them time, some one-on-one time, so to speak, with a Jack Spearco. And not, you know, not out on the floor where it's just crazy, you know, and you got so many people walking by and talking and, you know, saying hello and, you know, things like that. So, I agree. I think that would be, I think it would be awesome.
I wonder how we take steps to do that. I mean, and I would love, if anybody has any suggestions, please email Colorado Ron at, no, I'm just kidding. give Colorado Ron more work. I think we should work on that. I think that would probably benefit not only us, but benefit the people who are coming to the event also.
Right. No, I agree. So yeah, we'll have to look into that and start working on that if we can pull that off. We've got time.
Oh. Yeah. Well, what is it? We're 5 weeks away. Four and a half. Five weeks away.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. So. You know, I want to jump on to you know, I'm heading, like I said, I'm heading to Singapore this week, and I'm going to attempt to call in from Singapore and do the show live next week from Singapore. And that should be, I think that should be interesting, but I wanted to kind of throw the warning out there to everybody that this is happening. So if it goes horribly wrong, we can blame Colorado Ron.
Wow, from Singapore. What is the time difference?
I don't even remember.
Might want to think that through. It might be like 2 o'clock in the morning.
No. I think from where you're calling from, it'll be 14 hours. I'm 14 hours ahead.
Okay, so 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Or 10 o'clock. I guess 14 hours. That's 10 o'clock at night. Yeah. Holy crud. Okay.
And I have what I have to do is I have to look at my itinerary. I'm not sure if I'll be in China, Singapore, or Korea when I do it. I haven't locked down my official itinerary yet, but you know, I'm flying into Singapore for the International Water Conference, and I'm hoping to bring back some great facts and everything else from that event there. And then I have to do a 1 or 2 day jaunt over to Korea, then a 1 or 2 day jaunt to into China, and then come back and try to get ready for the event, which will be going on like 4 weeks later.
Yeah, fun.
Isn't it? it's all in a day's work. Yeah, that's we're very international here.
I honestly don't know how you do it. I really don't know how you do it.
That's okay. I actually love it. Well, on top of that, just so people know, and hopefully I'll have some photographs of it when we come back, is I'm also going over there to meet the artist and the writer for the Self-Reliance comic books that we'll be coming out with.
Oh, sweet.
And the concept of the comic books are, they're graphic books, and we'll be putting out just basically individual topics that'll probably be anywhere from 2 to 6 pages long or 8 pages that will be full-size comic books. But every 6 months to a year, they'll be put together in a full graphics book, which will be a compilation of all the things that we'll put up for sale. And several of the people, including Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci and some other people, are characters inside the book that will be teaching the lessons. And so we're getting our first round of drawings and storylines when I go over to Singapore.
I'm going to be a character in there, you said?
Yeah. You're one of the characters that they're drawing up, and so is Bubba Da Vinci. And like I said, there's a handful of people that will be teaching lessons to the kids inside there. And I just can't wait to see how an Asian artist characterized Colorado Ron. I'm sure it'll be very humorous.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, he'll have the spiky beard and the spiky hair. It'll be very Dragon Ball Z, I'm sure.
Oh my goodness, that'll be pretty crazy to see. I can't wait to see that. That's funny.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit now. Next week, while I'm gone, but we'll be doing it, and I just want to make sure that we do this. We'll be talking to some people. Backwoods Home Magazine is sponsoring an Appleseed shoot out there in their neck of the woods.
That's right.
And we will be talking to some of the organizers of that event, talking about what's going on, who is Appleseed. And we've had Appleseed on our show before. We love those people. I'm actually thinking about bringing on our friends from Appleseed also. And I think we should do a whole round of just Appleseed conversations and find out who they're about and what they're doing and everything else. And then additionally next week, we will have, I believe, Jackie Clay is back on.
Awesome.
And Jackie's always wonderful. She's got so much information, and we'll be touching base with her to find out what's going on and what she'll be talking about at the event. And last event, she completely sold out and of her books, and she must have been in her booth for 8 hours signing books. and I was just like, I was amazed at how long the line was to get her to sign a book and to talk to her. So I think that'll be a pretty cool thing to do also. So.
Yeah, every time I saw her, she was just running and gunning. I mean, she was just talking to people, and it was funny. I walked by, and somebody just ran up and said, "I just have to give you a hug," and just gave her a big old hug. She's just, she's awesome. I love Jackie Clay.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So, what do we want? Are you okay with our challenge? We got about 10 minutes left to kind of decide how we want to challenge our people and what I want to put on Facebook for our weekly update.
Okay. So what would it be? Checking the batteries? I could do that.
Is that just the one that we want to do? Is that simple enough to go ahead and challenge? I love Jack's idea about the, you know.
I love that. That is a brilliant idea. Well, in all fairness, it wasn't Jack's. He said it was one of his listeners.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I guess it shows how humble he is that he actually gave credit to the person who came up with it. So,
but yeah, I agree. I think that would be awesome.
Okay, so this week we'll make it official. Check your batteries and light source week. Go out there and make sure that you go through your packs, your bags, your any of your prepping stuff that. And all your flashlights, make sure your bulbs are good, make sure your backup batteries are still good, and get all that stuff checked out. Heck, I have to admit, my biggest problem was I didn't even know where half of them were.
Oh, yeah, you got to get that stuff organized and get it in one location and don't move it, because it's so nice to be able to grab it in the dark or know exactly where it's at. So pick a spot, and that is the official spot, and it doesn't get moved and always gets put back in the same spot. And the way I did that, just so you know, is there's a couple of ways to do that. One thing is that I put holders on the wall for my flashlights. So that when I walked by in my food storage room and I looked, if there was a holder that was missing, you know, that was empty, then I knew there was a flashlight wasn't back where it was supposed to be. So I had to go hunt it down with one of my kids and figure out where they're playing with it at and get it back on the wall and get it hung up. So,
no, that's a good idea. I mean, one of the things that I was missing the most of, and I've got to just go through and do it, was like my lanterns. You know, because we've moved and we've got stuff packed up and I think I had to re-go through and go, where did I put that stuff? Which, you know something? If when an emergency happens, it happens quickly. And you don't have time to do the, where is that going to be? Very, very few times in your life are you going to have a warning that you're going to have a tornado or, you know, whatever the situation is, to the degree that you're going to be able to run out and go search for things. And, and I felt really, really, really stupid that I actually was questioning myself and going, where is this stuff? And had to go and search for it. And so I think that's going to be a main point for me to make sure I have that organized. And people who are highly organized are kind of laughing and going, well, you should have that under control everywhere already. But here's the problem is the people who are hardcore preppers, like a Jack, and he lives it every day. But for a lot of us who are just getting into it, we still have so much else going on in our lives that we haven't learned to make that just a daily routine thing that we're doing.
Well, I mean, think about it. I mean, that is Jack's life. Obviously we like to be as prepared as Jack, but in all reality, we need to just take it one step at a time. And that's why we're doing this weekly thing is, okay, let's do this week. Let's do this week. And, you know, before you know it, 6 months down the road, you're prepared and you've got all your systems in place.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot longer for me, but we'll end up getting there. All right. Are you going to try that paleo diet?
You know what? I might. You know what I'm doing right now? I haven't told anybody this, but I do this like once every couple of years. But I'm doing a long-term fast, and I'm actually fasting. And my wife just brought in a cupcake. Get that thing out of here. Oh, she wants me to see it. Okay, all right. Thanks. I'm fasting. All right, so I'm fasting for it's my way of saying, that I can control my own habits, even though eating is a bad habit of mine because I love to eat a ton of stuff. But I am I do anywhere between a 7-day to 14-day fast every year or two. So I just started it yesterday, and I'm on day two now.
What does that mean? I mean, we only got a few minutes, but I'm just curious. What does that mean? Because fast means different things to other people. Or you're just doing like water and bread,
just distilled water only. And what that does is basically it helps your body reset the clock, clean out all your systems, and get things back in order. And of course, cleans out your intestines and all that stuff. So, yeah, I do it. Like I said, I do it like once a year, sometimes once every couple of years. I think I missed last year, and so I'm gonna try and go for a 14-dayer this time. So.
It just doesn't seem healthy. I mean,
killing your
body for 14 days without no vitamins or all the things that you do. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I could do it.
Oh yeah, yeah. It feels so good as your body is. I mean, your body is detoxing. So the first thing that it starts to do is gets rid of the foreign objects that it doesn't know what to do with. And that's the first thing it starts to do. And by just drinking water, it's just like a whole total body reset. You're completely flushing. But you know what? If you'd like, I can, I'll have more, I'll do some research this week. So I have some facts in front of me and I'm a little bit more prepared, and I'll run down, the total benefits of doing it. I've got a buddy that does it once a year. He'll do a 30-day fast.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll start this week, and I promise I'll do a 14-day McDonald's fast. No McDonald's for the next 14 days.
You are the man.
I'm just kidding. We don't even.
And she came in to show me the muffin. Here I am talking about my fast, and she wants to show me the new recipe muffin that she just made. Oh, she's killing me.
That cracked me up. I mean, I don't have. I don't even have anything close to me. The nearest McDonald's is quite a ways away, so I don't necessarily have to worry about that. But, I'm actually doing – I'm finding personally that just going out every single day and my time's set up, so every day I have 3 to 4 hours or more sometimes because I go back out in the evening since the days are so long to actually work on the property. And believe me, I got a ton of work to do, cutting wood – getting the buildings in shape and everything else that, and I'll tell you what, moving out here and not having a Starbucks or a McDonald's or any fast food in this town, around me for me to go and jump in the car and run and go get a Taco Bell, has made a huge difference in my eating habits and losing weight and everything else. So,
I can imagine. So are you saying we probably shouldn't go on a road trip anytime soon?
Yeah, well, we always talk about that. The road trips kill me every time we do it. I mean, if I ever run into a Steak a Shake again, I'll probably be in trouble. But I think we can go ahead and worry about that when it happens again. All right, guys, we are going. We're doing, guys, like we said at the beginning, we're doing a short show today, so we're actually going to go ahead and close this out. We got a lot of things to get ready for before my trip to Singapore and. For Colorado and I to get the stuff ready for the events. So thanks Jack for participating in the thing. We'll look forward to having him. And we will talk to you next Saturday, same time, same place.
Take care.
All right.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best?
Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now. 866-762-9238. 866-762-9238 or go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com. Enerfood.com.
You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.